It's Drive Live. Sally Moussa, Claire Sharrock in the studio with you. And now it's time to talk careers.
Career Connect.
That funky music announces the arrival of our two guests in the studio. We've got David McKenzie, Managing Director at McKenzie Jones and, in the house, and Rebecca Kelly, Partner at Morgan Lewis and Bocchius LLP, both here. Welcome to you both. Oh, you know what I have to do? I have to do that.
You deliberately do that, Claire.
Just so you know that I have the control. Throughout the next hour, I have the power. It was all going so well.
Yes,
welcome to you both. We're going to be talking about, well, many things this afternoon, but we're going to start with corporate social responsibility. We're also going to get to how to resign and what to do if you're let go or fired. Also, the lines are open, of course, for your questions. Anything you want to ask David or Rebecca this evening, do get in touch. 4001 is the number if you want to send us a message.
Yeah.
Use our free messenger app, of course, Sally, or they can call.
They can call 044231010. We've already had a question in from Loida, and we will get to that in a few moments.
Yeah, I do encourage you to get your questions in soon, because it always gets really busy, and it seems to get busier towards the back end of the
course.
Hour, and then we run out of time to answer them all. So we do want to get to as many as we can. So 4001 if you want to throw yours into the mix. So let's start anyway with that topic of CSR, or corporate social responsibility, and some new mandatory rules that have come in for companies. And Rebecca, I know this news was announced a few weeks ago, sort of within the last month, but can you give us a quick outline of what the law means, or the new rules mean? What are people, companies going to have to do?
Well, so far, what it has been is actually an announcement that there will be a requirement for all private sector companies by the end of the year to have implemented a CSR program. And that program will have to there will be reporting mechanisms back to the government, and it'll be the Ministry of Economy, I believe, that will be responsible for that. Now, at this point, we don't have the regulations or the law, so it really is just a heads up by the government that companies need to be aware that CSR will be mandatory for private sector companies. What we would expect to see in the regulations is a percentage by which a company would have to comply with the regulations. So,
is that a percentage of their profits?
It's usually, okay. Yeah. So in other countries, what you'll see is that companies are categorised according to their numbers of their personnel and their revenue. And so what they may do is look at it and say, okay, those companies that are deemed to be small businesses will have to have a percentage of their revenue that is then attributed to CSR programs. And then I would assume that that program would mean that it was a sliding scale up depending on the size of the company.
Is that quite normal in other jurisdictions that companies are sort of forced into doing good things, if you like?
Well, interestingly enough, when you look at some of the other sort of jurisdictions, so if we look at Canada, if we look at the US or Australia, for example, these aren't mandatory requirements in those jurisdictions, but certainly companies do it out of both their goodwill, but also it's driven also by employees. Employees want to work for companies that care about the community that they operate in. And that's really important, I think. And that's why I think in this particular initiative has been announced in the year of giving for the UAE. So I think it certainly is aligned with that.
I think, you know, what you would normally see in other jurisdictions, such as Australia, for example, you know, companies, as you say, would be doing something for the goodwill of the community. And it's kind of seen as something that will grow the company's team spirit and sense of wider community and contribution. And it's great to see this coming through. But do we have any more details on how this is going to be implemented at all?
We don't. We don't have any details at all. And I must say that a lot of my clients already implement a CSR program. So certainly if we're talking about law firms, a lot of law firms will have a pro bono program. We have in the UAE, we already have the DIFC have a pro bono program, which encourages lawyers to basically donate their time to provide legal assistance to people that need free legal advice. And certainly in the firm that I'm with, we have a program whereby all lawyers must meet a certain number of hours per year that are given on a pro bono basis. So those types of initiatives will differ from company to company. And so I believe that the regulations will have to be quite broad because of the sectors that they will apply to.
David, let me bring you in here. What do you think or make of these new rules? First, as somebody who runs a business, but also from a recruitment point of view.
I don't think you can force people to do this. I think people do this naturally. I mean, we have a part of our business called MJ Warriors, and we do things that our consultants want to do, and it's because it's they actually really want to do it. So we did a lot of work with Al North School. We fed the workers, and that was driven not by me telling them to do it as a company head. It was done by them going, we want to do something good. So I think a little bit it's called corporate citizenship or corporate conscience, isn't it? It's very That's much, right. It's got to be driven internally rather than me standing up as the MD going, right, guys, this is our CSR strategy.
They're but if go, you've got pressure from rules to do that, you're going to have to do that potentially. I mean, you might not have to because maybe your colleagues are already doing those things. But in some businesses where it isn't happening, to me it seems like an odd thing to have as part of the set of rules.
But you'll be forced to do it, and you'll do it because you have to. But you won't do it from, you know, Islam is a great thing. You do it from your heart. And that's what this should be. It should be from your heart. You should be doing it without somebody telling you to do it. Now, I think the UA is very good because people are so busy in their day-to-day jobs and so busy trying to make money and survive in Dubai, they forget about some of the things that we need to do. And we were talking about this thing the other day. There was a whale found in I think, off Newfoundland or something. He had 30 plastic bags inside him, and he died because of that. Now, I was down at one of the beaches near Jebel Ali doing a triathlon, and there were people cleaning the beaches as we were doing the triathlon. I remember coming out the beach. I was obviously sweating and almost dying anyway, but I was watching them clean the beach, and I thought, why are they doing this? So I went up to them after and said, what are you doing it for? We do it on behalf of our company. I said, well, did they tell you to do it? No, we just do it because we want to do it. And they were cleaning all the plastic and the rubbish off the beach.
And those kind of things would count, Rebecca, would they?
I would assume so. And corporate social responsibility comes down to also an analysis of what impact your company has on the environment and what impact they have, you know, what's the carbon footprint that they're leaving behind. So cleaning up a beach, making sure that actually your employees are aware. Corporate social responsibility can also include making sure that you have a reduction in paper in your office. You can have make sure that you've got recycling programs, make sure that you're not using, you know, 100 different bottles of water each day. Whatever it is, whatever program you implement, I would assume would give you credits. But of course, we're speculating until the regulations come out. But I think it will also include, once the regulations come out, perhaps an education, a period of education for a lot of companies here who haven't come from countries where things like plastic bags are banned automatically. So there may be this period of adjustment for a lot of companies where they need to be informed about
that. At least
the
rules are getting people thinking.
That's right.
Yeah, we talked about this earlier. I just bought a bottle of water from the garage and you put it in a plastic bag.
Yeah.
I just said, there's no point, really. You can just give me the bottle.
Yeah.
Or just give me the water.
Sometimes you say to them, I don't need a plastic bag, and they almost don't hear you because nobody ever says that. You know, and
they do look very
you.
Surprised. Yeah.
And but I did say, what about the environment? And you went, just smiled.
Yes, sir. Probably, yeah.
But I think it's a good thing. Look, anywhere where a country like Dubai always leads from the front, and we're very good at leading by example. I think if you show people what to do, I think if you enforce it, people do it begrudgingly. If you advise and guide people to do it, then people naturally who are good corporate citizens will actually do it. And we all love this country. You know, we want this place to be a good place to live and work and survive, etc. So, you know, litter, you know, diesel fumes, all those things need to be looked at.
Do you know, I'd love to hear from, from listeners, from people out there, what are they already doing? Maybe they are already doing things within their organisation, or if they're not, what are they thinking about? How are they going to implement these new mandatory rules that we've just heard about just a month ago, in fact? It's going to be implemented, I think, by the end of this year. Is that right,
That's
Rebecca?
Right. That's right. Yeah. That's right. So I would expect it to be published in the Gazette, which is the official publication for announcement of legislation, towards the end of the year. And that will mean it'll give companies a transition period. So the fact that we've been given notice now is an indication that it will come out this year. The law will come out, the regulations may come out, and then there will be a period of time in which companies will have to make sure that they comply.
Is that every company will have to do this, despite size or
Nasra asks a similar thing, David, because Nasra wants to know, are free zones also included? So maybe you could answer both.
I would assume that free zones would be included. There'd be no reason to exclude them. And if they were excluded, then the free zone authorities may be put under a further obligation by the federal government to ensure that they themselves implement a similar program for their free zone companies. Mm. There's no question in my mind that it would be based on the size of the company and not the size of the company that exists as far as a larger company. So a large global company with just 5 people here would still be called a small company, I would assume. It's not going to have to meet those requirements because its parent company is a large company.
Do you think, I mean, this is probably leading into an eco discussion, but I think my kids are more environmentally friendly than I probably was as a child.
Oh, I think so. I think it's more. It's taught in schools. I think they're more aware. Absolutely. So I think it's a bigger problem than it was, or we've realised it's a bigger problem than it was when we were younger. Maybe.
Yeah. Mm. It's snowman's blood.
Exactly. Oh, I'm glad you listened, David. Paying attention, Sally.
I listened to Sally. I thought it was a very engaging conversation.
We'll get your thoughts on that later.
Yeah. Your thoughts on this one, though, on CSR, as Sally said, what are initiatives are your company doing already? Or what would you like to see your company getting involved in? 4001? Let us know. We're going to be talking soon about how to leave a job. How do you resign in the best way? Or what to do if you get fired? All that's coming up on Career Connect.
This is Drive Live
on Dubai Eye 103.8.
It's Career Connect this evening, and we've got David McKenzie, Managing Partner at McKenzie Jones in the studio, and Rebecca Kelly, Partner at Morgan Lewis and Bockius LLP with us, talking what all things the world of work, really. And Rebecca, we're going to talk now a little bit about how to resign. And we get a lot of questions in on this program whenever we do Career Connect from people asking what their rights are if they resign, what their rights are if they have been let go, and what their rights are if they're fired. And they're three very different scenarios, aren't they? But let's take the resignation. People worry very much that they're on the back foot, really, if they choose to leave a job. Is that necessarily the case?
It's not at all. I think everybody has to start at their contract. And they also have to understand that whatever their consequences are that have led to the resignation, that, you know, the resignation is probably a good thing. So they need to work on, and the first question always is, what do I get now that I've resigned? They need to look at their contract, because all the contracts will differ. It'll differ if you're in a free zone. It'll differ if you've got a fixed term contract. It'll differ if you have an unlimited contract. And so you need to be careful about what kind of contract you have. Now, David will probably say you shouldn't stay in a job that you're unhappy in, so therefore the contract may not matter as far as determining whether you want to resign or not. But certainly, from a legal perspective, you should be aware of what will happen if you do resign. No company seeks to really penalise people for resigning, but what they do is make sure that by including things like notice periods or restrictive covenants, they are actually protecting their business because you've chosen to leave.
And there's a right way to go about that, David, I guess, working your notice and making sure that you do the right thing by the company during that time can help foster the relationship, leaving each other on a happy note rather than a negative one.
It's a bit like getting divorced, I suppose, isn't it? I think you're absolutely right. The most emotional thing is going into your current boss and saying, I'm resigning. Now, there's either you do it because you're really cross and you're upset and you don't think you're being valued, or you're really genuinely sad. So we had a guy recently who's been with me 4.5 years. I won't mention his name. He's a great guy. Came in, he said, look, I'm leaving for these reasons. And we're like, thank you for your 4.5 years. He's done everything properly. I've just had a WhatsApp from him saying, let me know when you're back from holiday and we'll catch up. And I talk about him in the industry as a good leaver.
But is that normal? You've treated him very well there, but people get very nervous that they're not going to be treated in that way. Yeah. And the minute that they say they'd like to leave, their rights go out the window. They get less gratuity, this, that, the other. They're going to have to fight for every penny, every dirham.
But they don't. I mean, to be honest with you, most companies here, if you resign the right way and you do it the right way, which is, first of all, think about why you joined that company in the first place. What really excited you about it? So just remember that time. And then when you go and resign, think it may have got worse and you may not be enjoying it as much. But think about why you're there, and think about your boss opposite there doesn't hate you. you may have had a conflict in terms of it's not working out, but be honest with them and say, or her, and say, look, this is the reason why I'm resigning. It's nothing about the company. I want to move on, and make it amicable. The problem is a lot of people go and resigning and they go, these are the reasons why I'm resigning. Yeah, I hate you. I hate
in
the company.
In your face.
Yeah, you did this smack. Or you didn't do that. Yeah.
It's important kind of to leave all emotion out of it. You know,
difficult.
We forget, you know, that sometimes you think, oh, resigning is going to be a quick process. I'm just going to, you know, tell them that's it. I'm out and it's done. You've got your notice and that's it.
So let me give you a great story on that. So when I was in UK, I worked for Monster, a big search engine company, and we bought loads of little companies. And one of my sales directors came in and said, I've just had one of my guys resign. He threw his stapler at me, chucked his car keys out, and he's taken his bin. Why he took his bin, not his stapler? Anyway, so he went.
It's a whole different conversation, David.
He went to another company and literally had a go at us constantly for months. 6 months later, we bought that company. Yeah.
And how much did he regret that?
But you know what? My MD was great. He just called him and said, look, this is what's happened. We know about history. Let's clear the slate. We want you here. And actually, he was there for the next 5 years. So it was my MD was a very good guy. He was a very engaged individual that understood. But that guy, when we walked in the office, he must have gone,
oh, his heart
no.
must have sunk. Yeah, but I reckon that probably does happen here in Dubai quite a bit because it's quite a small town in many ways,
very
isn't
much.
It, in terms of people moving within industry and maybe going to competitors. And I guess, you know, that's something that must happen to people a lot.
I see a lot of issues when it comes to, and when an employment dispute ends up in the court, that means that the employer and the employee have left on really bad terms. Mm. Because honestly, when at the point of resignation, the way that the employee acts and the way that the employer responds dictates how it's going to carry forward. And if either party shows a lot of disrespect, and usually it's the employee, the employer will turn around and say, well, you know what? If they sue me, so what? Hmm. You know, we will defend that because we've done everything right. And so the employee may launch a tirade of 1,000 words and say, this is what I'm entitled to. You've got to give me my half day annual leave that you deducted from this. And it all becomes so petty. And then 3 years down the track, they're still sitting there without resolution. And it's really not in anyone's benefit or, you know, in their best interest to have the matters go to court. So I do believe that at the point of resignation, before you resign, you should be aware in principle of what you're entitled to and then work with your company to make sure that actually your exit suits their needs and suits yours.
Robin has messaged in, Rebecca, 4001, by the way, if you want to add your question this evening, says, what if you were asked to resign? Some of us can't afford to go through the legal battle, unfortunately. I guess that's a scenario. Being asked to resign, really you're being told that there's not a job for you, I guess, and that it's better if you resign, I assume is what they're referring to.
You're being fired.
And sometimes
in a softer way, I guess.
Yeah, and people are asked to resign for a couple of reasons. Sometimes it's because they haven't themselves worked out that there isn't a position there for them or that they have been a non-performing employee. If they are asked to resign, it could also be that it has in relation to, you know, the perceived exit is an amicable exit and that they weren't fired. It protects their own rights in respect of that. As far as looking at the legal benefits of resigning as opposed to being fired, certainly if you were fired and they are trying to fire you for gross misconduct or for anything that you have done, then the employer is able to withhold any of your end of service benefits and it may penalise you. So it could be in your better interest if you are asked to resign, to just resign, but then ask for things like, okay, if you're asking me to resign, I want additional notice so that I may find alternative employment in the region. So they may keep you basically on their visa for an additional month, even though you may only have a month's notice under your contract. So you need to look for things, I believe, that are not necessarily monetary in value, but help you attain alternative employment. And things like keeping your visa open is always a good thing to have. And being asked to resign isn't the worst thing that could happen. Turning up the next day and finding the office closed and having no... which happens here. It happens in
the
UAE.
Has it happened to you, Rebecca?
No,
it hasn't. You seem scarred by that.
No. But it has happened to employees where they have... you know, they've turned up and the company has closed down.
Really?
I know there was a recent one with a real estate agent that closed down, and there must have been about 15 employees. Now, they all go down to the labour court and they file a complaint. But, of course, if the owner has gone back to the UK...
And there's no money, for example.
There's no money left.
Why did you point at me then?
Well, because...
let's not cast any aspersions on David.
She actually pointed at me then.
Yeah, Mackenzie Jones. It wasn't Mackenzie. Everything's good at Mackenzie Jones.
Absolutely not.
We're still open, by the way.
Absolutely.
Lots of questions coming in. We must go to the news, but lots of questions coming in. Add yours, 4001. We're going to get to those very shortly.
No matter your preferred communication, stay in touch with Drive Live, only on Dubai Eye 103.8.
It is Drive Live, Claire and Sally with you this afternoon. And today it's Career Connect.
Career Connect.
We've got David McKenzie of McKenzie Jones in the studio. We've got Rebecca Kelly of Morgan Lewis and Bocchius LLP also in the studio. And we were talking before the break there about resigning, how to do it the right way, how to accept a resignation in the right way on the case of the employer, and also the differences between resigning or if you are let go. So do interact with us this evening if you've got a question on that issue at all, 4001. And lots of questions are coming in on a variety of topics, Sally. What have we got?
We do. We had a question earlier from Loida. This is kind of in terms of changing up the job that you're already in, saying, am I stupid to have told my line managers that I'm happy with the company, the environment, but however, I can't see myself growing old in the same job and the field of sales and technical support. He said, can't see myself driving around most of the time when I get older. And then I asked I told them that I'm happy to relocate to a desk job, to a quieter, less mobile job. And I've just renewed for another 2 years, but hope to either desk relocate or find another job after that. Am I wrong to open up to my managers? He asks. What do you think, David?
Put off by the women's cricket on
did
the
you
TV.
Just get
sorry, they're getting absolutely annihilated by South Africa, aren't they? Anyway, sorry, digressing. Yes, Sally. It's a really good thing. And I think actually that was a very well-written email that I think the person's engaged with their employer and explained the issues they've got. Now, the outcome could be a very positive one where the boss or the manager goes, absolutely, let's put in place a process to move you to a desk job. Alternatively, they could react really badly and say, well, there's no place for you in this company. If they're a good employer, they'll do the former thing. But I think is it a lady in
the lady? Loida, the person.
So Loida has done, I think, a very good thing, because I think if they hadn't talked to their boss about it, they're going to be leaving that company anyway because they're painfully disillusioned and they don't want to do a role. But I think in the email, actually, I saw it on the screen, it said, I'm very happy in the company.
Yeah.
Tell your employer that.
So make sure that it's that positive-negative sandwich thing, that tell them you're really happy in the company, but that you might feel better in a different position, because you can probably be too honest with your employer if you go on about hating things too much, right?
You're absolutely right. I think, look, whatever happens, as an employer, you want to feel that people are happy in your company. They are most of the time, but occasionally they get disillusioned or they want to do something different. I'm much better if somebody comes to me and says, look, I love working here. And we had this about 2 or 3 years ago. We had a receptionist. She was a brilliant girl. And she came to me and said, look, I love working here, but I can't see where I'm going. What am I going to do? And I said, there isn't really anywhere for you to go. She goes, well, will you help me get a job? We placed her in a job and she's still there now. And to me, that's a really good thing, because we were very honest with her. She was honest with us, and we helped to get a better job for her. So
more questions coming in. This one from Hanny saying, I switched my job. My visa is in the process of being transferred from one free zone company to another in the same free zone. Myself and my family have no medical insurance during this period, as I've left my previous employer and yet to join the new one. Is it legal? What are my options in terms of medical insurance?
I don't know whether or not that's a legal question as much as it's an insurance question. I believe that he probably should contact an insurance company and see whether or not there's a an insurance policy on offer whereby it can fill the gap. Because, of course, we have a system now and we have laws in place now where it's mandatory for employers to cover the insurance, health insurance, for their employees. If he hasn't yet joined the new company and doesn't yet have the visa, then the company, the new company, is under no obligation to provide that. So a conversation with the new company about whether or not the insurance company can bring forward the start date of the policy to cover the family whilst the visa is under process. The visas in insurance in a free zone transfer should only take up to about 3 weeks. So if that doesn't work, then a conversation with the insurance company to see whether or not there is any policy that can cover them for a month. Failing that, I would actually recommend that he sees if he can get travel insurance with a health benefit. If you are concerned about health insurance in this country and you don't have a residency visa, then the only other insurance that can protect you when it comes to having any hospital visits would be a suitable travel policy.
Yeah, I mean, he's not breaking the law by not having insurance, is he? That's the thing. But obviously, it's not necessarily a sensible position to leave yourself in. Alexandra says, even when leaving on good terms, companies will still make your life difficult and try to pay the minimum possible. Court is often not a solution, as you can't get a new job if you have a case ongoing. That's from Alex. And I think, David, that's what I mentioned before. And sorry, Rebecca, I know you've got an answer for this. But when I was saying that not all companies are as understanding as you were describing. Rebecca, go.
No. I was just going to say, actually, what happens in practice is that if you do have a court case ongoing, the old rules were certainly if you filed a case, you weren't able to transfer your visa to a new employer whilst there was a court case going on. But now there is a system where you can apply to the court with your new employer in order to transfer the visa during that court process. Because otherwise, you could be sitting here for a very long period of time waiting for the court to deal with your dispute without having any means of income. So the court recognises that, the ministry recognises that, and so therefore there is a process now. So if you do have a claim, and I'm not sure whether Alexander does have a claim, if you do have a claim, I would speak to your lawyer about making an application that permits you to have your visa transferred.
And what about this companies trying to get away with paying the minimum possible? I feel like we do get a lot of questions about that. If not in Career Connect, Sally, during our legal hour, which was yesterday, lots of people feeling hard done by in terms of what they get paid out when they leave a company.
It's about expectations. And so before, when I mentioned that prior to you resigning, you should have an idea of what your end of service benefits will be and what it is that you're expecting when you do resign. Now, if those expectations are not met by, say, a 5% difference, then people are generally not that upset about it. But where there is a startling difference between what you're expecting and then what the company is willing to pay, that's when the negotiation should start. I don't see that companies try and not pay their employees. What I do see, though, is perhaps sometimes companies misunderstanding what the benefits are for employees when they resign as opposed to being terminated. And I also see a lot of people looking at what other people have been given on their exit without knowing the full facts of why that person exited. So, for example, an employee that may have been asked to resign in recognition of the fact that they did accept the resignation package, perhaps they got a six-month payout. You then go into the manager's office and you say, I'm going to resign too, and then they give you your 2 months payment, which is in line with your notice pay, and you see you then are left with the feeling that you have been completely and utterly ripped off. But actually, that is not the case. It is usually a case-by-case situation, and the bare minimum that people complain about is what they're statutorily entitled to.
There's another interesting question that's come in. This one is from Faisal. Can your employer ask competitors not to hire their staff?
Only in situation, not specifically. They can't ask them outright, don't hire my staff. They can't prevent somebody else from working elsewhere. Now, unless there was an agreement in place, which there wouldn't be, there is no way that legally that would be upheld. What I do see in practice, though, is that competitors compete very well. But what they also do is sometimes they have an understanding that they won't poach each other's staff.
Mm.
Other times their relationship is quite vitriolic, so they will actually deliberately go out and poach each other's staff. But I do see in the larger companies now there is an understanding that they won't take employees from their number one competitor.
What about these non-competition clauses, though? Well, a question to both of you, really. David, they still do exist in people's contracts. How enforceable are they? Are they enforceable?
They are to a degree, but the reality is, and probably Rebecca can go into the detail, but the thing about non-competes is, example, if my business, people move different consultancies, and we don't have that much of it, which is quite nice, but we've had a guy move recently to a competitor. He's done it the right way, and I've said to him, just you cannot go after your clients. And he said, fair enough. I know he won't, because he's a good guy. He can after a certain period of time. It's not forever, but we get a chance then for that 3 or 6 months to actually go for those clients and build that relationship back up.
That's right. So non-compete clauses are only ever going to be enforceable if they are realistic. So that means they have to be defined by jurisdiction, by term, and they have to be likened to the level of the employee. So you can't have a low-level employee prohibited for 3 years from joining any other company that does something similar to their ex-employer. It has to be sensible. I can only use the word sensible, but it has to be. The law actually allows for non-compete provisions in a contract, but they are only ever enforceable in certain circumstances.
If you go directly for, so example, if we're dealing with a client now and one of my consultants leaves and then goes straight for that client, that can be enforced.
You could then go after that person because they've broken some sort of terms.
Non-compete agreement, which is in our contract.
There did used to be it used to be quite common here for there to be written into contracts, you can't go and work for any competitive industry, anybody in our industry, any competitor, for a year.
Within 100 miles.
Yeah, exactly. For a year or something like that. And people would have to leave the country. You know.
And what has happened, of course, there's two things that I'll mention. What's happened is the law has changed in respect of employment bans. When I first came here, if you left your employer before the end of your limited term contract, they could actually seek an employment ban, so you couldn't actually be transferred to another company. That's gone now. But the other thing is that when it comes to non-compete agreements, the only measure of damages that can ever be assessed is money. So you have to, if you are in breach of a non-compete obligation, then you have to have caused your ex-employer financial damage in order for them to actually go after you. The court is not going to make an order that stops you from working for another company. What they can do, though, is actually make an order that penalises you financially. And so that's where the fear comes from. And certainly the contracts that you mentioned before, that's what people were like when they first came here, like years ago, that's what people were given. And it's called a liquidated damages clause, where it says, if you leave my employment and you go and work for a company that is in direct competition with my company in Dubai, then you have to pay me $100,000. Now, you know, it's crazy when
that's not sensible or reasonable, which were two words that you used earlier. Yeah.
But because it's in the contract and you've agreed to it and there's an amount specified as being the amount of damages that would flow as a result of your breach, that is actually more recoverable and enforceable than having just a generic, you cannot work for a competitor. So, employees need to make sure they read the contract that they sign.
Yeah, it's the usual advice, really, isn't it? Read the contract. We need to take a quick break. It's Drive Live. It's Career Connect. Lots of your questions coming in. 4001 if you'd like to add yours. You've got a few more minutes to get them in.
We want to hear from you. Find us on Facebook. Tweet at Dubai I 1038 FM.
Drive Live, it's Career Connect this evening. David McKenzie in the studio with us and Rebecca Kelly. And David, we're talking about resigning and we've gone through lots of the different scenarios you might end up in if you resign, if you're fired, what have you. But if you do decide to leave a job, you sort of touched on it earlier, but I'd like to get a bit more detail. What is the right way to go about it and what process do you then need to go through in terms of making sure that you leave with the things you're meant to and that you don't leave with things you shouldn't, etc.?
Well, like the bin. I think you've got to think, list down why you're resigning first before you go and see your manager so that you're very clear and you're emotionally detached from that decision, which is very difficult to do because, you know, there are three things in your life which are important: your, you know, marriage, your kids, and your job. Or in my case, my house and my cat, which is now missing. If anyone's seen him, his name is Blue.
And we will come back to that because you did say you wanted to mention
would
your
you
cat.
Mind? Yeah.
I'm anyway, going to write a note here. Off
sorry.
You go.
So, you know, be objective, don't be emotional. Do a proper handover. So write out your handover before you see your boss. If somebody came in and said, well, I'm resigning, I know you're not going to like this, but this is my handover, these are my reasons, and by the way, thank you so much for taking time with me, and you were a great, you know, I loved working here. I mean, the guy that did that recently was like that, and I, bit of a tear in my eye, actually. I was really sad to see him go, but he's doing the right thing, and I think it's made me feel good about him, and he's felt good about our company, which means that, 6 degrees of separation, he will talk to six of his mates who will then talk to six who will be our clients eventually. So it all comes back round. So you've got to remember that you will bump into your boss at some point in your life or your boss's friends.
Oh, social media will make sure of that. You don't even need this 6 degrees of separation rule anymore.
There's only two now, isn't
yeah,
there?
Yeah, that's it. You're
well,
done.
Now I've just announced my cat's lost. My wife's going to hear. So.
Oh, had you not confessed that yet?
No.
Okay. Oh, you've got 20 you've go. Got 20 seconds, David. Your cat's missing. What does it look like? Where from?
Right, his name's Blue. He's black and white. He's a feral cat. Bit of his ears missing. We live in Damak Hills. He's gone to Arabian Ranches. Please get him back because I really like him.
Oh, he might have tried to go home. Where did you move from?
Arabian Ranches to the infamous Damak Hills.
Okay, so you've got to look in both those locations. Mm. All right, question,
so
Sally.
Yes.
We do look after our guests on this show.
thank you for that.
You do. You definitely do. Sayed says, my contract says I have to pay my visa expenses if I resign within 1 year of my unlimited employment contract. I've signed it, of course, and am I liable to pay the same if I resign within a year, he asks?
Look, usually visa costs are never recoverable against an employee. It depends what terms he's actually agreed. It seems an unusual request to pay it back, and it may be included in another provision of the contract that says if you resign and you go and join a competitor, which would then fall into the category of a liquidated damage, which is the cost that's going to cost the employer to replace him. But usually visa costs themselves are never recoverable against an employee.
What about relocation costs?
Well, relocation costs are not required under the law, and so people are only ever contractually required to pay them. So usually what happens if I say to an employer, if I put in the contract, I'm going to give you, say, a 30,000 dirham or a 10,000 dirham settlement fee, which is basically, it allows you to relocate here. But that fee is going to be recovered against you if you leave my employment within the first 12 months.
Yeah.
That would be recoverable.
Okay. Makes
but,
sense.
But not the visa
fees. Never the visa fees. The visa fees are a cost to the employer.
Another one here, Rebecca. My line manager yesterday told me that senior management was seeking my termination. He advised me to resign as soon as possible. I have a 3-month notice period. If I submit the resignation before they begin my termination proceedings, am I automatically entitled to my 3-month notice period with pay? And this really comes back to where we started with this resignation conversation. Is it better to resign or be fired or let go or what is it? And that he's been told that they're going to maybe terminate him anyway, and I guess it depends for what reason. So he's been advised to resign instead.
In this situation, he would be entitled to his 3-month notice period. What is open to both employers and employees is to reduce that notice period if it suits those, both the employer and the employee. But an employee can't be forced to reduce their notice period. So if the contract allows for 3 months, then he would be entitled to that 3 months.
Okay.
Another one from Asfiander asking, I want to ask about the law regarding when you're resigning. There's only 1 month notice period that you have to give to the employer, but why do we see that companies mention 2 months notice period, and when they mention in the contract the amount of 2,000 dirhams will be deducted upon leaving the company? This is what he is asking.
Yeah, I mean, that seems to be probably 3 or 4 different provisions in his contract. I don't know whether or not all of those are related to the resignation itself. But usually what happens is if you have agreed on resignation to provide 1 month notice, that's what you would be entitled to. You couldn't have anything less than that if you are paid monthly, because that's what the law requires. If you're paid monthly, then your notice period must be a month.
Yeah, Abdullah's got another question asking, how long can a company withhold end of service benefits irrespective of reason? He was made redundant in December last year. He's still waiting for his end of service.
the only recourse he has is to go down to the ministry and file a complaint. If his questions to his company remain unanswered, even though I see that he notes that it's all amicable at the moment, the only recourse he's got is go down to the ministry. There is no reason, and there's nothing in the law that allows a company to withhold end of service benefits for this amount of time. And I would hope that at this point he still has his visa open, because otherwise, if he has cancelled his visa, he's also signed a document that says that he's received all of his end of service benefits.
Rebecca, on the question you just answered previously, Gary has messaged, have you seen this, David? Please warn people, unethical managers recommend resignation knowing that gratuity can then be reduced. Is this true?
It is true. Mm. It is true.
Could you quickly explain that for us?
Yeah, usually what I've seen is that actually companies will not follow that if they've asked them to resign. If companies are asking them to resign to avoid the payment of this of the gratuity, so the gratuity is reduced if an employee has been working for a company for less than 5 years, then they are only entitled to 2/3 of their gratuity. If they've been working anywhere between 1 and 3 years, they're only entitled to 1/3 of their gratuity.
If they resign. But if they let go,
if they are fired,
they get the full amount
for no reason. So if they're fired for
made redundant,
then they're entitled to the full amount. They're also entitled to the full amount if they've finished their fixed term contract. But what they are not entitled to a fixed term contract, if someone resigns during the period of a fixed term contract, they're actually disentitled to all of their end of service benefits. So this is why at the outset of this hour,
we're right back there, aren't we?
Your contract.
Beautifully done.
Know exactly what it is that you have signed up for, and make sure that where you are resigning, if someone asks you to resign, that you actually say, well, if I do resign and you want me to resign, I'm entitled to all of my end of service.
And get that in writing. All roads, it seems, on Career Connect lead to either end of service benefits and reading your contract thoroughly. That about wraps it up for Career Connect this week. Thank you for all your questions. And of course, thank you to our guests. That's David McKenzie, Managing Director at McKenzie Jones, and Rebecca Kelly, Partner at Morgan Lewis Bockius LLP. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.